Radio Land. I'm Mark, and I'm drinking at KJ's in Morris, Illinois, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. Yeah.
Thank you, Marcus. Enjoy Morris, Illinois. Good morning and welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. Great to be here with you today for show number 882. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson is our engineer in the WGN radio studio today. We love Bob, and I love you for listening to this show. So let's talk about Chicagoland. Chicagoland. It's a term that so many of us use, myself included. And traditionally, this term has been used to describe Chicago and its surrounding suburbs. I grew up in Elmwood Park, right next door to Chicago. In fact, we were on the city's street grid system, so Chicagoland kind of made sense to me. We weren't in Chicago, but we still were affected by the culture and traditions of Chicago. In July, our brothers and sisters in sound over at WBEZ produced a segment that dove into the history of the term Chicagoland. In that segment, which was really cool and had a lot of great history, there were voices of local folks, maybe even from, dare I say, Chicagoland, who thought the term wasn't a good one. One person in the segment said, quote, "It feels like it's a catch-all that's lumping all of Chicago's issues, saying that possibly Wilmette has the same issues as the city of Chicago," end quote. Okay, first, I had no idea that the term Chicagoland was such a trigger for people. I mean, the term is all over the place. Think about commercials you see and hear on local TV and radio. Phrases like, "It's the best deal in Chicagoland," are pretty common. If you grew up here, the term should be second nature. Second, let's talk about what this is. It's a term that defines the region, and in that region, there is a shared cultural experience. What is that cultural experience? Well, take your pick. The love of the Chicago Bears, the anti-ketchup on your hot dog sentiment, the love of tavern-style pizza, the suspicion that local politicians are playing fast and loose with public money. You get the idea. But here's what I would emphasize. A big part of this culture is our work ethic. The fact that here we want to get it done, that we're real people, we're working hard, and, a lot of us exude that friendly Midwestern vibe. Do we have challenges that are particular to certain parts of the Chicagoland area? Absolutely. But the city of Chicago has challenges that are particular to certain neighborhoods. We're smart enough, or at least we should be smart enough, to understand this. I have a feeling that if we can't grasp this, then we're just being lazy. I know that the national media certainly is lazy when it comes to the Chicago is nothing but a violent gangland that is on fire narrative. Yes, there are issues of inequity that result in serious violence problems, but despite that, I guarantee you that there will be plenty of people going out to restaurants, bars, theater productions, live music, art galleries, and house parties this weekend all over the city. And all over Chicagoland, and they will have a great time. So to say, as the person from that public radio segment I referenced earlier, that when we use the term Chicagoland, we're lumping Chicago problems in with other suburbs, well, that's just lazy. So let's celebrate who we are in Chicago and the land around it. We have a shared identity here, and we should be proud of that identity. On the show today, we'll talk about, wait for it, Chicagoland, specifically the Latino experience in the suburbs of the city. Also, we will get an update about a controversial education program in the state, and we'll hear some new local music. Whether you're in Chicago, the land of, or beyond, thanks for being here. The local Latino community has serious economic power in Illinois. This group has the highest labor force participation rate and the fastest growing consumer power. However, this population also sees some significant problems, like the highest percentage of workers earning less than $15 an hour. Recently, a report was released called Latinos in the Suburbs, Challenges and Opportunities, and the information in this analysis tells part of the Latino community's story. Sylvia Puente is the president and CEO of the Latino Policy Forum. That's a local organization that works for equity and economic prosperity on behalf of Latinos in Chicago and Illinois. The website is latinopolicyforum.org, and Sylvia Puente is here with us today here on Outside the Loop. Sylvia, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome. So this statistic here is amazing. More than 50% of the Illinois Latino population lives in the areas surrounding Chicago, so those suburban areas. So with this report, what did you set out to do? Why tell the story in this particular analysis?
Well, thanks for that question, Mike. So let me say that this report was also a collaboration between the Latino Policy Forum, the Metropolitan Planning Council, and the Great Cities Institute at the University of Illinois at Chicago. And we looked at this because what we've known for at least the past 20 years that the majority of Latinos in Illinois live outside of Chicago and in the surrounding areas, as you said. But we know very little about them, and we know very little about their economic mobility, their access to quality education. We know very little about how well they're doing. So we really wanted to have a better understanding because for the past two decades, as we've seen the Latino population grow, the majority of that growth has occurred in the suburbs and in the collar counties.
This statistic from your report from 2010 to 2020, those years, 84% of the Latino population growth in the suburbs and in the Chicago metropolitan region, and specifically 16% in Chicago. So the question here is, why do you think we're seeing such a growth with this Latino population in the suburbs of Chicago as opposed to Chicago proper?
Yeah, I think that's a couple of reasons. We saw in the 1990s, when most Latino population growth was happening because of immigration, we saw new areas of Latino settlement outside of Chicago. People were coming directly from Mexico and Latin America, not just to Pilsen and Little Village, historical neighborhoods in Chicago that were ports of entry, but they were going to Aurora and Waukegan and Cicero and Merrill's Park. And what I think we're seeing is just the maturation of that trend. Those families that settled there in the 90s are now having children, and their children are having children. So we've seen the real shift, because not only are we seeing that growth happen in suburbia, as you've said, but the majority of this growth is also happening from people who are born in the United States and no longer from migration.
It's interesting to trace that history because, and I remember I spoke to a professor from Elgin, and he was saying, you know, we don't have, and this is changing, but we don't have a great history, an accounting of history of what you just said. And so when, you know, you get the question, like, why is this happening? I think part of it, we're living that history, but now I think we are aware of it. And certainly from this report, we're aware of it. And this is something to pay attention to. And I think that for me is what jumped out. Does that sort of ring true with you as well?
Oh, for sure. And what we're also seeing, though, it's not just documenting Latino population growth in suburbia, but it's also understanding the report basic points out that as the Latino population has grown in suburbia, the overall population, the non-Latino population, has declined. We've seen statewide that the Black population has basically remained flat, but we've seen decreases in the white population. So Latino population growth is driving economic growth, is driving labor market growth, is driving home ownership growth in suburbia and in the state. So that's one of the reasons, as you said at the beginning, we are key drivers of Illinois' economic prosperity, and very little is known about that. And Mike, I really call it a duality or a paradox, because while there are major contributions in all those areas that I said, we know, though, it's a paradox, and that there's still a very large disparity between the economic, social, economic status of Latinos and non-Latinos in suburbia. as you said, half of all Latinos who work earn $15 an hour. Well, we've seen impressive increases in the number of households that earn over $75,000 a year, and we've seen more households in that category. We also have seen that Latinos have the lowest per capita income. Hmm. And that's one of the examples of this paradox that I said, that we're seeing some good trends, but some challenging trends happening as Latinos have moved to suburbia.
Another incredible statistic from your report, that projected by the year 2040, the Latino population in the state of Illinois will be 3.5 million. That's about 30% of the population. That is incredible. And so what you were saying there about the economic impact, I think that really comes through in this report, the economic power of this state's Latino community. And so let's focus on the impact of that and what's happening because of that. So you're saying that this group, this Latino group, and the increase of that group really is an economic powerhouse. I think that for this particular area, let's call that out and explain, if you can, the significance of that.
Yeah, we know there's a report that says that Latinos have the GDP of the Latino community in Illinois is about $100 billion.
Wow. Right?
And as we've seen the population grow, we have in the report that we are driving home ownership growth because our population is increasing. Other populations are remaining stagnant or declining. So as we look at who's buying new homes, we're buying the majority of new home ownership growth is due to the Latino population. As we're looking at labor market growth, because our population is growing, we're the majority of the new entrants into the labor market, right? And then just basic spending power and purchasing power of, you know, going to the grocery store and buying basic consumer goods. The challenge of that, for better or worse, is because we don't have a lot of high income Latinos. They're not saving as much. So the majority of the dollars that they're spending on a daily basis are going for consumer goods, which also is contributing to the local economy. Another little paradox that we found in this report is that working with the University of Illinois Great Cities Institute, we found that more than 6 out of 10 Latinos are living in what we call high hardship communities. Mm-hmm. And high hardship is defined as the number of households that are overcrowded and the number of both young children and older people in a community, and it's an index, if you will, that the Great Cities Institute has created. And the paradox here is that more than six out of ten are living in these high hardship communities. But when we just looked at the growth of the Latino community, what we saw is, just looking at the new Latinos in suburbia, about a third of them are moving into very low density Latino communities, communities that are only 10 or 20% or less Latino. So this paradox, and that the growth is we're seeing economic social mobility of moving into what we hypothesize are traditional middle class suburbs, right, with a trajectory of upward economic mobility, but the majority are still living in low wealth suburban communities that we've categorized as high hardship.
Going forward here, we have this paradox, as you say, high economic power, but still a lot of struggle and hardship in the Latino community locally here. What would you like to see change from the information that you have gathered from this report? I mean, it could be policy-wise, it could be moving in a different direction or a particular direction, but where should we go using this information now that we've uncovered here?
Yeah, well, I think it's a basis for corporate America, for philanthropy, for municipalities to better understand what's happening around the region and to determine how to address and invest in the Latino community, right? From basic as schools, right? What does it mean for schools and school populations, and how do we ensure that more Latino students are finishing high school, going to college, and graduating from college, right? So how does the school district think about this? But also in terms of our social service infrastructure, organizations that really help people that are in need, we know that that's historically been concentrated in Chicago. So how do we begin to further invest in stabilizing and basic provision of social services that really help families gain economic mobility and get ahead? How do we invest in those nonprofit organizations that provide those kinds of services to be able to invest more and expand services in suburban areas? Because historically, so much of that has happened in Chicago. And then thirdly, I think certainly for municipalities, as municipalities consider, you know, their homeownership base, their tax base, how do they think about how they both incorporate and integrate Latinos who have moved into their municipalities to be neighbors and to really integrate into suburban life?
And really, I mean, this is a humanity issue, but also you can look at it from the economics. Everyone can win here. You know, if this group is invested in, I mean, we've seen the data. This has a just an amazing economic impact here. So really, everyone could benefit economically if we invest in the Latino community.
Yeah, we end the report by saying advances Latinos, advances our shared future. And yeah. So ultimately, it is about our shared future, how we all live together as neighbors, and how do we make sure that there is equitable investment and resources for this population.
Well, this report is important. It's very interesting. And it's called Latinos in the Suburbs, Challenges and Opportunities, put together by a coalition of organizations. One of those organizations, the Latino Policy Forum. And Sylvia Puente is the president and CEO of that organization. The website is latinopolicyforum.org. And so we could go onto that website to access this report. Sylvia, this was really a great conversation. I appreciate your time and thanks for all of your hard work. And I think this is really a conversation that we should continue to have.
Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate the opportunity to be able to share with you today.
Post-Labor Day and school is humming along. For students in public schools, where they live usually determines where they attend classes. For students in private schools, there isn't a boundary restriction for students. But not everyone can afford to send their kids to a private school. Enter the Invest in Kids program. It's statewide and it grants tax credits to people who fund scholarships that allow Illinois students from low-income families to attend private schools. This is a controversial program, and it's one that could sunset unless state legislators approve an extension. Samantha Smiley is a reporter at Chalk Beach Chicago, covering everything having to do with local education. Check out her work at chicago.chalkbeat.org. Samantha is here with us today. Samantha, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me again.
You are welcome. So, okay, this Invest in Kids program, this became law in 2017. So briefly, can you just explain why this became law? What's the need for this kind of program?
Yeah, so as many people probably remember, is that for 2 years there was a budget impasse. So there was a budget for 2 years around this time. And as, you know, Springfield was going along in 2017, there was a big push to change how education in the state was funded, which is why now we have an evidence-based funding formula that kind of helps the state, you know, distribute funding based on need of different schools. And also during the time that they were negotiating this, there was some backdoor negotiations about this program, Invest in Kids. And it just popped up in those backdoor negotiations and became a thing that passed into law. And so at that time, lawmakers had agreed to sunset the program after 5 years. So that's actually in the state statute. You can go look it up and see that actually it always had a sunset date. But in 2022, there was like a push to extend it. So they extended it for about a year. And now it might sunset January 2025.
So the controversy with this, as I understand it, this is causing a commotion here because there's an issue about using public money for private schools, which sounds like a very much a straightforward voucher program. And opponents of this are saying this is pretty much like a voucher program. But I guess the difference here is that anyone can donate and receive a tax credit when they donate to these scholarships, which are then these scholarships are awarded to low-income students. So can you just briefly explain what the commotion here, what the controversy is?
Yeah, well, it's like you said, it's advocates who are not in favor of the program says that it's diverting tax dollars away from public schools to private schools. And then also there is this concern that like some of these private schools are religious schools. And so there are some concerns about if these schools discriminate against LGBTQ students. There's also some concern about, like, are these schools able to support the learning for students with disabilities? And again, there is so much, you know, as from the perspective of a reporter, right, when you start talking about private institutions in general, there is so much that we don't know that's happening in a private institution. We can't see data on, like, are students actually doing well? Like, are students or are on, like, the, you know, learning what they need to know for each grade level. We don't know if they're actually doing, like, you know, the right thing. What's federally required for or required by the state when it comes to certain student groups? There's just so many things we don't know and don't have data on because it's a private institution. But for the advocate side, it's really that the piece of diverting the funding from public schools to private schools. And I know that it's a tax credit, but I think how they would explain it is like, well, those taxes could have went to a public school instead.
Yeah. So this, again, the issue that comes up traditionally with vouchers is just that this money should be sent to public schools, public education. But on the other hand, you know, you have families that say, look, I want to have the choice of where to send my kid and the best possible choice that fits my kid when it comes to learning. And as you report here, during the 2021 and 2022 school year, about 9,000 students were recipients of this money. So it's a sizable chunk of students who are getting this. So do we know if this were to sunset, would those kids still be able to get that money in the short term?
Yeah, this is the question that I'm still trying to figure out as a reporter. It's like, what is going to happen to those 9,000 students? Are they automatically, will they be like automatically like enrolled into the public school district? Is there some way to keep their scholarship at least until the end of it, of that 2024-2025 school year? You know, it, again, like when you're talking about people in their schools, if they have a supportive school community, they want to keep going to that school. So it's like, what, like if a parent really, like a parent can't pay for that scholarship or for that tuition to that school, is the state gonna give them a scholarship? Is that private institution able to give them a scholarship to maintain enrollment? But again, we don't know. That is like the biggest question mark that on my reporting list right now is what happens to those students.
Governor Pritzker seems to be behind this, from what we can tell, based off of a candidate survey that he filled out last election cycle. So there is some momentum, it seems, for this in the state legislature.
Even though the governor has like filled out a candidate survey during the last election that says he's in support of it, it's really unclear for me about how the legislature feels about it. It doesn't seem like they're, like the office of the governor and the legislature are in step on this. But it's also just a lot of confusing messages that I've been getting. Like, I don't feel like any state lawmaker has actually said, like, we're going to do this again. We're going to extend it. I feel like over this spring session, I didn't get clarity on that. I just heard from everybody, like, we don't solve it during the spring legislative session, that we still have time during veto session to figure it out. And then it's like, well, if they don't do it, veto session, will they be able to extend or sunset it during the lame duck session that normally takes place in January? So I would say, again, even in this case, that's a, I don't know how this is going to turn out.
Well, we will keep an eye on it. This Invest in Kids Act, this program that's been around now for a few years, causing some controversy around diverting public money to private schools, but also then providing scholarships for low-income families to some of the state's private schools. We could check out chicago.chalkbeat.org to see what Samantha Smiley, who is a reporter for Chalkbeat Chicago, and her colleagues are working on. Samantha, I appreciate the time as always, and thanks for cluing us in on this issue.
No problem. Thanks for having me again.
Let's chat about some local music from Matt Tigler and his band. The new album that comes out early October is called Hands Free Downhill, and it sounds great. And we can go to matttigler.bandcamp.com. That is spelled Tigler, T-I-E-G-L-E-R, matttigler.bandcamp.com. Matt, welcome to Outside the Loop. Nice to have you here.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me.
You have a show coming up October 15th at Space in Evanston, a great room. We'll talk more about that in a little bit here, but let's talk about your music. Again, you sound great. The band sounds great. This is your newest record coming out October 6th, and this was this record after a long hiatus. Tell us, Matt, how long has it been since you put out a record?
Well, the last record was about a little over 20 years ago. I was on a local label called Water Dog Records, and my life took some turns. I had a kid and had to make some changes. And a couple of years ago, I started writing again, and eventually I felt like I had a body of work to make another record.
You know, you say that, you know, you have a kid and life happens, and it does. And when you are a musician and maybe you're used to getting some time to yourself, shall we say, and being able to write and to compose, and that just gets turned upside down. Yeah, sure. You got to prioritize some things, and maybe time isn't what you thought it was. And in some cases it goes really fast. And in other cases you're like, well, what are we doing? So, here you are now after 20 years putting out the new record. How does this one differ from what you were doing previously?
Well, when I made the first record, I was working full time as an actor and acting teacher and had a lot of time to put into music. Everything I was doing in my life was creative. The last record I really took my time with. I brought in a huge number of musicians, percussionists, world music, and classical musicians. And this time around, you know, I don't have as much time, so this is more of a straightforward rock record. You know, we brought in a couple of special guests, but for the most part, it's a bass, drums, guitar, a little bit of keyboards kind of record.
Say it's very much in the vein of pop, you know, and put this pop rock sort of sensibility. I think that works for what you're trying to do here. And you mentioned that you have a few guest musicians that are on this record. Tell us about that, because the folks that you have on this record, I mean, they've been playing in Chicago for a long time. They're incredibly talented and they sound wonderful.
Yeah, these are, I'm very lucky. This is a collection of people who, many of whom have their own bands, have put out many records themselves, and who I'm a big fan of. And the thing about Chicago musicians is they're very generous. And if they like what you're doing, sometimes they'll work with you. So it started with Tommy Zender, who is himself a great songwriter, multi-instrumentalist. And we started working together, and it became apparent that he was kind of producing. So he did. And then we started inviting others. One of my favorite songwriters, Steve Dawson from Dolly Varden.
Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah, and he's playing bass. So he's writing all the bass lines, which really really fills the music out.
You mentioned Tommy Zender. Tommy, now this is something. Please tell him hi, because I think the last time I saw him, I believe we were in the WGN Radio studios. This was like 2002. He came in and recorded some Christmas music on a project I was working on. And I mean, of course, he was wonderful. He was playing guitar and he sounded wonderful. But he is like, that's just an example. You say how Chicago musicians are generous. Sure, people will give their time, come on board and work with whoever I feel like. And he's a phenomenal musician.
He really is. And 20 years ago, when I put my first record out, I didn't have a band. And I was the label manager introduced me to Tommy at that time. And Tommy played with me and was kind of the music director. His musical abilities are just way exceed mine. And so we've been friends for years, and we have similar musical tastes. But Tommy's going to be the headliner at Space. At the show, we're going to have my record release show, but he's going to be the headliner. He played there 3 years ago for his own record release show. So that'll be his first time at Space in quite a few years.
So let's talk about what's happening at Space. So this show is Sunday, October 15th. Again, Space is one of the best venues in the Chicagoland area. And the address is 1245 Chicago Avenue in Evanston. This is a Sunday night. Tell us about what you're going to be doing here. So Tommy is going to be headlining. You're going to be performing. Tell us about the show.
Well, we're going to have as many of the players from the record as possible. Larry Brown on drums, fantastic drummer.
He's great, yeah.
Plays with a number of different bands. John Abbey was the engineer who recorded. We might have him jump on stage to play something. And then also the other drummer on the record is Gerald Dowd, who just released a fantastic record a couple weeks ago. Gerald is also drums for about 100 different bands. He's kind of famous he's played on almost every Chicago musician's record. But he plays pretty regularly with Robbie Foulkes.
I mean, right there. I mean, Robbie Foulkes, come on. This is what a great collection of musicians that are going to be at Space in Evanston. That's Sunday, October 15th. Space in Evanston, 1245 Chicago Avenue is the address. And we can go to your Bandcamp, matttigler.bandcamp.com. That's Tigler spelled T-I-E-G. L-E-R. So, Matt, you've got the big gig coming up in October, October 15th at Space. You've got the new album coming out October 6th. I was going to ask you, well, what else do you have going on? But it sounds like you have a few things going on. But beyond that, any other gigs or anything else on the horizon?
Well, we're just focusing on the record release show for now. I'm hoping to schedule some other shows either later in the year or early next year. But not focusing on that just yet.
All right. Well, we will, I'm sure, find out when you are on to the next thing. And who knows, maybe it won't be 20 years before the next album, or maybe it will. Who knows? Hopefully we're still here having these conversations. That'd be fun. So everyone right now should check out matttigler.bandcamp.com. Again, Tigler spelled T-I-E-G-L-E-R. Matt Tigler, local musician, songwriter, and performing at Space in Evanston, October 15th. What a great show that's going to be. Hey, Matt, congratulations on all of this great success. Congrats on the new album, and we'll talk again in the future.
Great. Thanks, Mike. It was good talking to you.
And that just about does it. Outside the Loop show number 882 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. You are the greatest, as is Bob Ferguson, who is always on duty in the WGN radio studio for us when it comes to the engineering skills. Have a wonderful week. I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.